opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Good morning and welcome again to Boomer Generation Radio. This is your host, Richard Address, on this beautiful Tuesday morning here in Philadelphia. And this morning, we are honored to have as our guest, Mr. Andrew Kushner, who has been practicing law in Camden County for about 36 years, developing some specialties in the area of estate planning and elder law-related work. Andy, welcome to the show. I appreciate you coming in. You also teach at Rutgers, correct? Rutgers Camden?
That's right.
And welcome. Welcome to Boomer Generation Radio. One of the things that I wanted to talk about with you today is really explore some of the issues facing baby boom generation members and their families in the areas of law. I want to talk about and ask you some questions, especially after we come back from this commercial break, about some of the legal ramifications of medical issues. And we'll come back with Mr. Andy Kushner right after this message.
If there was a fire, you'd know what to do. Find the nearest fire alarm or call 911. But what if you were about to be released from the hospital and they told you you weren't ready to go home? That you needed another care facility instead because you weren't really strong enough yet? Well, waiting until the hospital asks you which center you want to go to is too late. You need a plan so you can stay in control of your life and not feel like a victim. The goal, after all, is to get your life back and get back home as soon as possible. At Powerback Rehabilitation, you get aggressive therapy plans on the newest equipment so you can get home sooner. Call today and ask for your personalized Powerback card and keep it in your wallet. If you ever need it, give it to the hospital and say, "I want my Powerback." Call Powerback Rehabilitation at 888-982-2000 or visit powerbackrehabilitation.com. Powerback Rehabilitation is a Genesis Healthcare company.
My dad came to live with us last month, and you know, it's going pretty well.
I feel like I never have time for myself.
With him being around more, it really lets us catch up on things.
His memory isn't what it used to be.
We get up and we have coffee.
He usually wakes up at 4:30.
Then we go for a walk.
He needs lots of my attention.
I do need to keep an eye on his medications, though. That's important.
Sometimes I feel like a pharmacist.
I'd say John and the kids are adjusting pretty well.
They honestly have no idea what I'm going through.
It can be a little challenging.
Help.
But so far, so good.
I could really use just a little help.
For those dealing with the daily struggles of caring for a loved one, we hear you. That's why AARP created a community with experts and other caregivers for advice, tips, and support. Together, let's help each other better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Good morning again, and welcome back to Boomer Generation Radio. Our guest, Mr. Andrew Kushner, lawyer from Camden County. And Andy, again, thank you for coming. The approach to many of our generation now dealing with just the realities of our own, I guess, mortality and anything else, issues dealing with advanced directives, healthcare proxies. How much of that are you seeing, and what would be your recommendation dealing with that for people of our generation?
Well, Richard, first of all, thanks for having me. I think it's a wonderful show, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
Thank you.
You know, when I first started, back when the earth was still cooling, advanced directives and the like didn't exist. In fact, the issue wasn't even addressed. At least it wasn't addressed on a regular basis. Today, it is very common, as you know, that it is something that hospitals request by federal law, whether or not an individual patient has a health care directive. It is something that becomes part of every estate plan. And our generation, even our parents' generation, and of course the younger ones, should consider the idea of an advance directive and health care proxy. I don't know if you think we should actually go into what constitutes those documents so that there's some clarity there.
Well, I think that's really important also to touch on the difference between the advanced directive and a healthcare proxy, the power of attorney for healthcare. So could you just draw that distinction? Because I think in a lot of people's minds, if I have an advanced directive, then everything's taken care of.
Sometimes this document, called a healthcare proxy, also sometimes known as a healthcare power of attorney, is a document which gives a third person the actual right to make medical decisions for you of any kind, not necessarily life-threatening or life-sustaining decisions, but generic decisions. In most states, such as New Jersey, that document does not become effective unless you are incapacitated. And that's an important distinction. Some people think that if you sign an advance directive, that you've given away your right for medical decision-making, and that's simply not the case. So if you view a healthcare proxy or healthcare power of attorney as a power of attorney to giving someone else the right to make decisions, the advance directive, sometimes shorthanded as a living will, says, look, there may be some circumstances when I don't have capacity to tell you what I want, that I do or do not want medical treatment under certain circumstances. And that's important because there's several types of advance directives. They can be as simple as no resuscitation, no feeding tube, no hydration tube, no ventilator. Of course, they can be the reverse, where someone can have an active advance directive requiring every experimental treatment and every possibility to keep one alive. So an advance directive is not one hard and fast rule, but it is something that you can do today while you are competent in order to tell the world, the medical profession, as well as your family, what you want under certain circumstances.
I think that distinction, the popular mindset is of, I have an advance directive, it's really limiting, it tells people what I don't want. I think what you just mentioned, maybe you can draw that out a little bit, that advance directive can also tell people, this is what I do want. I want to be aggressive in these particular situations. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. And you know, there is no one particular form of an advance directive. Sometimes an advance directive may have a laundry list of procedures and treatments that can be checked off yes or no if you have a particular condition or disease. Others can say, I know that I don't want certain treatment, but I certainly want to be kept comfortable. I want pain medication to keep me.
Palliative care.
Absolutely, palliative care. So the advance directive is something that people should not be afraid of. And in fact, it's something that will do very well for an individual if the circumstance should ever arise it needs to be employed.
So also, why, according to the statistics that I keep hearing in some of the work that I do, why do only 20%, which is the last statistic I heard, of Americans have advance directives or any type of document such as this? Is it a fear of just confronting their own mortality, or is just laziness?
I'd have to give you anecdotal evidence because I don't know of anything in particular other than my own experience.
No, and but that's good.
And I think a lot of it is what you've just said. People do not want to deal with the issue, and that goes a long way. Perhaps they may find a family member has had this problem. Perhaps they may have a spouse. They may have a friend who has gone through it, and they recognize as a result of the trauma and the difficulty that that person has had, maybe it's time for me to get in touch and deal with this.
Have you ever been brought into a case, I mean, where there is a dispute between children, siblings, over the care of a loved one, of a parent? And
And as we know, today with blended families,
right,
that's going to be even more of an issue as we go forward.
So and what about Andy Wills, the idea of drawing up a will? How often do you recommend that we revisit that will?
You know, my standard will transmittal letter when I send the document drafts out to clients say, if you've had a major change financially or in your family situation, or at least every 5 years, you should review the situation.
And that also hold true for the advance directives, because when I teach this, the religious component of this, I always try to maintain to lay people when I go out and do workshops that you have to revisit this every 4 to 5 years, because the medical technology that you're talking about can change and does change so radically.
I think that's very true, and your own attitudes about your mortality may change within that period of time.
So are you seeing, I mean, when people come to talk to you about this, about this decision, this discussion? Where do you, let's say I go and we sign this advance directive and it's a witness, et cetera. Where do I put this? Do I just give it to you? Do I, where else should I put this for safekeeping? And so people know that I have it.
Well, you know, unlike wills, which there really should only be one original signature, powers of attorney and advance directives can have multiple copies. There's nothing magic about the original signature. I generally have three done so that they are available. I keep one against the chance that it's become more and more frequent that the clients or their family will lose them and make the desperate call to me at some point where they need a copy. The original should be left where it can be accessed. As we already know from discussing the concept of the advance directive, it's only going to be effective when the individual is incapacitated. So the family member is not going to run into the hospital and say, stop the treatment of an otherwise competent individual. It's that individual who's always going to make that choice. It just has to be available. Where that is every family's own decision, whether it stays with the person who makes it, whether it goes to a family member or remains with the attorney.
Do you ever suggest that it also be filed with a primary care physician and the physician, you know?
Most primary care physicians are going to look for a copy of it.
Right.
So, yes, I think that's an excellent idea.
I've also run into situations in rehab centers, nursing homes, that families will give a copy of all the documentation to the nursing home just in case something happens and they're not there. At least there's an instruction with the nurses. The physician's on call, somebody goes into an arrest or something, and it's been predetermined, and that conversation, it's important to have that conversation, I would imagine, even in those situations.
Yeah, the skilled nursing facilities, the assisted living, even the independent living facilities, I think generically they're going to ask for that document as part of their entry information.
You mentioned in passing just before about blended families. Walk me through some of the scenarios that you would advise individuals who, especially boomers or second marriages, subsequent marriages, adult children, perhaps each from the primary marriage having their own estate planning, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How difficult is it to blend families legally, or what advice could you possibly give to somebody who's perhaps contemplating this as we speak?
Well, from a legal standpoint, it runs anywhere from the difficult to impossible. And what I mean by that is this. One of the things I had mentioned to you is that I am an adjunct professor at Rutgers Law, and what I teach is professional responsibility. Back in the old days, they used to call it ethics. In dealing with potential new clients, a husband and wife situation, you've got to ask some initial questions, and part of that is first marriage, second marriage, third or fourth marriage, children, yes, of this marriage, of a prior marriage, or perhaps all combined. Unless the husband and wife have a common plan and can recognize that they may have differing desires, the attorney has almost an impossible situation in certain circumstances, because they cannot serve two masters to the extent that they can provide confidentiality, that they can provide independent professional legal advice, if they have differing opinions of what will occur upon the death of the last of them. Now, that's not to say in every case an attorney may not represent a husband and wife. Of course, that's not true. But there may be circumstances where that husband or that wife wants the independent, unbiased, and certainly confidential advice of that attorney to the exclusion of his spouse. In those circumstances, the attorney can't represent both. He should represent only one. That may cause difficulty within the family, but that is essentially the requirement of attorney-client conflict.
Mm-hmm. So how that raises, as you were speaking, the word prenup kept coming into my mind for some reason, which I probably can't figure out right now. But not only in first marriages, but do you see an increased numbers of an increased volume of people in coming to you for advice, legal advice on second or third marriages, drawing up these prenups?
Yeah, it's interesting. The prenuptial agreements are, I let the matrimonial lawyers handle that stuff.
Okay.
And it will come to me afterwards. But it's indicative of a major problem, and that is what happens not only if the marriage doesn't work and the marriage dissolves while they're both alive, but what happens if one of the two die? what rights does the surviving spouse have? And that very often is created in a prenuptial agreement, sometimes an antenuptial agreement. It can happen postnuptial, where they can get together and decide that they're going to have a game plan. Now, they do need independent legal advice in those circumstances.
When we come back after this break, I want to pick up on something that I'm seeing in my work, and other colleagues and people in the aging area are also seeing, having to do with older adult cohabitation, and whether there are certain things that people who are contemplating this, not that that happens in Philadelphia, but let's just say some other places in the country. And we'll do that right after. I really want to bring you up to date and mention some good friends of mine, Mal and Barbara Kornblue, down in the Vineland area, who really have created Tandems East of Pittsgrove, New Jersey, which is a specialty tandem bicycle shop, and it caters to couples who are serious about cycling together and being fit in this very exciting sport. Tandems East is now in their 25th year, and they've sold bikes around the world as well as here in the local Delaware Valley area. They offer specific events. They carry a variety of different brands, including their own brand. They've asked me to remind you about this Tandem Expo on March 23rd to 24th at the Pittsgrove Township Middle School, where more than 75 tandems will be on display, and there'll be seminars, there'll be things for sale. The event is free and open to the public. There's also a one-day cycling event at Tandem Sunday, May 5th, in beautiful Elmer, New Jersey, and a Tandem Weekend of 2013 at the Golden Inn in Avalon, New Jersey, on May 31st, June 1st, and 2nd. You can contact Mal and Barbara and Tandems East at 856-451-5104. Their website is www.tandemseast.com. You can friend them on Facebook, and you can call them for a personal appointment and a test ride a tandem at 856-451-5104. That's 856-451-5104. Their hours are Monday through Thursday from 6 to 10 p.m. and Saturdays 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tandems East. It's an exciting way to spend a day. They tried it on me once, and it was filled with interesting, exciting things. Anyway, Mal and Barbara, good people. Tandems East down in southern New Jersey. The phone number, 451-5104, area 856. Andy, excuse me, back again to some of this conversation. I'd like to raise this issue that we're finding more and more, at least in my work, in some of the baby boomer and aging work, and that is this issue of older adult cohabitation. Have you had any experience with couples who, let's say people, a widow, widower, divorced, divorcee, 60s, 70s, 80s, decide to move in together, not to get married? They have no intention of getting married. Do they come to you for any type of legal advice or concerns?
Yes, it's more and more common.
And what are those issues that they're coming to you about?
The most fundamental issue is that they are not married. In New Jersey, we also have, for same-sex couples, we have the idea of civil unions, and also there is a vestige of what's called domestic partnership, which predated civil unions for both same-sex and heterosexual couples. Those state laws will give couples the ability to get some benefits that are state-related, but it will not change things relating to federally mandated requirements. Just as you mentioned, Social Security, federal estate tax law, federal income tax law, these things still require a traditional marriage. If one does not have a marriage and one is not in a state that allows for a civil union or a similar type of law, the problems that can occur when there is a need for distribution at the death of one, there is no legal arrangement without absent that kind of a relationship. The world does not necessarily have to rely on that partner to provide information in the absence of a power of attorney or a healthcare directive. So while people may have spent years together, perhaps even decades together in that capacity, that doesn't assure them of any rights either during the joint lives of the two of them or when one of them passes away. So you have to substitute wills, powers of attorney, perhaps even contractual arrangements to make sure that the intentions of both of those parties are executed.
And in a situation with adult children, have you had experience with those where people who are cohabitating without marriage then will redo their wills to make sure that this the other person is included in that? And then I guess the follow-up is, have you had experience there where on the death of one of them, the adult children then come to you and say, we have to void this because this really is not right, or not, was my father or mother really didn't know what they're talking about?
Yeah, it's really an area fraught with difficulty. And as I tell clients or potential clients all the time, one of the reasons to defeat or void a will is not, I don't like what it says. There has to be actual legal basis for voiding a will. It's a long, complicated, and quite expensive process. Of course, the way around it is to make sure that the two players, the couple that is involved, gets appropriate legal advice, sometimes independent, and that legal advice be transmuted into something that is a legitimate document. You're not going to make everybody happy. You can't take into consideration children's desires if it is not the parent's wish, which is why most times if I'm representing a parent, there will be at least one portion of the conference, if not the entire conference, where I exclude children who may be there. Mm. There's legal reasons for that. There's an attorney-client confidentiality, which is destroyed if a third party is in the room. But more importantly, it's required that the client explain to the attorney without the concern of a child or another third party being in the room that they would not be as clear and candid as they could be if the two of them were together without children being there.
One of the other scenarios that I wanted to bring to you this morning really speaks to this generational phenomenon of the baby boomers and this idea that there's people that we all know who are, and let's say in their 50s or 60s, their children have left. They're empty nesters, so to speak. Kids are gone. They may be looking at still 5, 10, maybe 15 years of full-time work. But these individuals know that transitions are coming. They're thinking about their own life. They're all of a sudden realizing that they have to start asking certain questions about how we move forward. What's the best advice that we could give couples, individuals in this situation where they're looking sooner rather than later at these major life transitions?
Well, I think you and I have a shared understanding and experience with this, and that is planning ahead. I know there is no substitution for it. It's especially true when parents of boomers who are now elderly the children are going to be dealing with the inevitable medical problems, the inevitable financial problems. And one thing is certain in this life, and that is if you are required to make a decision under duress in an emergent manner, it's generally not going to be as good as one that has been planned out in time with alternatives and at least an understanding of what your choices are. That's no more or no less true when it comes to boomers ourselves, because we have a tendency, maybe I'm speaking personally, of believing that we will continue to be the Woodstock generation.
Yes.
No matter how old we are.
Right.
At least my kids have reminded me that that is not the case. But we also need to take control of where we're going from a fiscal, from a medical, from a personal point of view. And that will include looking ahead more than just the next week.
So this idea of, for want of a better term, the pre-need of having, of sitting down and beginning to have a conversation early enough to put these plans, that's the best advice we can give people in our generation, and to sit down with the financial planner, the lawyer, and try to plot out as best as possible these next several years so there are no surprises.
It's a start. Yeah. You know, one cannot plan for everything and expect it to work.
Right, right. The planning and this idea of, also the boomer desire to be in control, so according to sociologists. I want to finish up with this one question because it just speaks to so much of what's going on in society. There seems to be an explosion of internet legal advice, that you can get anything you want legal. You can form a corporation, do this, do that, by just sitting there, tapping a certain button, pulling up a certain website, and filling out a certain form. Walk me through very, very quickly, because we only have about 2 minutes left, the validity of searching for legal advice on the internet.
You can get good advice. You can get good direction. But here's the rub. When someone comes to see me, whether it's for a business problem or an estate-related problem, the difficulty is that the value of the services is at least as great in the communication and the advice as it is in the document that results. Trying to now change that so that the document is the key and it's the advice that's secondary, I think, is a major mistake. There was a turn of the century, last century, coffee merchant by the name of Charles Arbuckle who always had the idea and the slogan was, you get what you pay for. I think that's to a large degree applicable here. You need to find someone that you're comfortable with that will give you advice, not only generate documents.
So it's, again, about a relationship and developing a trusting relationship with somebody, which is in many ways, I guess, hard to do with tubes and a screen.
And that's a fundamental point I think you've made.
Thank you. Before we end, I want to remind our audience as well, as we talked about last week, of Lubetkin Communications. A very good friend of mine, Steve Lubetkin, and is standing by, really wanted to talk to us about and offer you the opportunity to develop family memories, a private family legacy, having a conversation with those members of your family, conversations which are recorded on high-definition video and a documentary style featuring interviews with the members of your family from a variety of different generations in a scrapbook, a video scrapbook. This is a powerful way to understand your family's traditions and stories, to keep these memories alive from generation to generation, to hear them in their own words. My own website, JewishSacredAging.com, has been working with Lubetkin Communications in Cherry Hill on a variety of different issues. Lubetkin is an award-winning video and audio documentary production company, and they can create a family legacy video that you will treasure for years to come. You can get more information on www.lubetkin.net or by calling them at 856-751-5491. I mentioned Jewish Sacred Aging, and you'll get a 10% discount. I want to thank our guest this morning, Mr. Andrew Kushner. Andy, lawyer in Camden County, specializing in adult and elder care issues, and I want to thank you for providing us with some very, very valuable information and insight. Good luck. Have a great day. And to all of you, have a great and wonderful day today. Good morning. See you next week.